So welcome back to the Deep Dive, everyone. Today we are heading into, well, a pretty fascinating origin story from the global stage.
Yeah, it really is. And it's one of those stories that kind of completely subverts your expectations of how things are supposed to work.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking about a highly technical, fairly rigid military force that basically managed to build this world-class mentoring blueprint, and they did it by doing the exact opposite of what you'd expect from a military.
Right. They chose people over process, which is not exactly standard operating procedure for a military machine.
Definitely not. So to guide you through this today, we've got a really solid stack of sources on the table. We're pulling from internal historical documents, some deep strategy papers, and the actual operational handbook of the Royal New Zealand Air Force Mentoring Program.
Which is such a gold mine, by the way. Reading through that handbook really puts you right in the room with them.
Oh, totally. Speaking of which, I want you, the listener, to just imagine walking into a specific room at Base Auckland back in 2008. You'd expect salutes, right?
Yeah, lots of rigid posture, uniforms, the whole nine yards.
Right. But instead, you see a senior, high-ranking military officer pouring a cup of coffee for a 19-year-old junior recruit.
And they are both wearing, like, jeans and t-shirts.
Yeah.
Completely out of uniform.
Yes. No uniforms, no chain of command in sight. Just two people having a really vulnerable conversation about the younger recruit's personal life goals.
So mentoring in the RNZAF didn't just start as some mandatory top-down directive.
No, it was this totally organic response to a very human need inside a super strict system. But, you know, to really understand why they felt the need to strip away rank like that, we have to look at the culture first.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the cultural landscape of New Zealand in the early 2000s is like the whole operating system for this story.
It really is. You can't separate the two.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, there's this incredibly deep cultural emphasis on ancestry and genealogy.
Right, this idea of togetherness, the belief that your past isn't just behind you, it actually extends forward into the future. You carry it with you. Exactly. And our sources highlight this core New Zealand proverb that it just perfectly captures the mindset. The proverb asks, what is the most important thing in the world?
I love this part.
Right. And the answer is, it is people. It is people. It is people.
Which, I mean, in a normal corporate environment, that's just a poster in the break room.
Yeah, exactly. Just lip service.
Yeah.
But there, it's a foundational truth. But then you smash that beautiful cultural philosophy into the operational reality of the RNZAF at the time.
Right. Because we are talking about a very small force. Fewer than 3,000 personnel in the entire Air Force.
Which is tiny.
It is. To put that in perspective for you listening, there are individual aircraft carriers and other navies that have more people on board than this entire National Air Force. So it's almost like a small tech startup where everyone has to wear multiple hats just to survive.
That's a great analogy.
But, you know, they're trapped inside a massive corporate enterprise structure, which is the military. So how do you break down those silos?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, in a small force like that,
yeah,
you just can't afford to treat people as interchangeable cogs. You can't treat them as cannon fodder.
Because if one highly trained avionics tech leaves, you can't just plug in the next one.
Exactly. That multi-million dollar aircraft doesn't fly. And the RNZAF was transitioning from a force relying on, like, muscles to one relying on minds. The technology was getting incredibly complex. They needed every single person operating at their absolute best to maintain an efficient fighting force.
So recognizing that people are your most important asset is great, but actually changing a rigid hierarchy to reflect that, that requires a serious catalyst.
It does. And it wasn't just one mandate from on high. It was this really rare convergence of three totally different perspectives.
Yeah, it's like top down meets bottom up. So let's look at the strategic vision first. You've got the Chief of Air Force, Air Vice Marshal Graham Lintott, and Warrant Officer Keith Gell.
Right, the heavy hitters.
Exactly. And they wanted to unlock the potential of these bright young personnel, totally independently of their rank. They knew the talent was there, but the hierarchy was bottling it up.
But then at the exact same time, you have this grassroots initiative bubbling up. There was a senior non-commissioned officer, a guy named Colin Eady.
So an SNCO, basically a super experienced middle manager, right?
Yeah, someone who's been around the block, knows how the machine works. And he was incredibly frustrated. He and his peers had all this massive untapped experience.
But they had no direct subordinates, so no one to officially mentor.
Right, so he proposes this voluntary matching system.
Yeah.
He's like, let us mentor the young folks who want to learn.
Okay, so you have the top military brass, and then a frustrated middle manager with no direct reports, and then a psychologist walks into the room.
It sounds like the setup to a joke, doesn't it?
It really does. The third thread is Caro Pizarro, a young psychologist who comes in and basically tells the military that their whole assumption about rank is wrong.
Yeah, she challenged the idea that holding a higher rank automatically makes you a good mentor. Mm. She was advocating for this holistic whole person development that sat completely outside the standard promotion track.
So how did these completely different agendas actually align without causing chaos? I mean, turf wars are standard in these organizations.
Well, what's fascinating here is that the strategic guys, the grassroots SNCOs, and the psychologists, they all identify the exact same problem.
The lack of structured development outside of rank.
Exactly. They realized they weren't competing. They were just holding different pieces of the same puzzle. So they merged their visions and created a single unified pilot program.
But having a unified vision on paper is one thing, right? To actually implement this inside a strict military environment, they had to break some really fundamental rules of military culture.
Well, they threw the rule book out the window.
They did. So they launched this pilot program in 2008 at Base Auckland, and they brought in Wendy Baker and the New Zealand Coaching and Mentoring Center.
Which was huge, bringing civilian coaching expertise directly into the military. That alone is a big deal.
Right, but then you look at the rules they broke. First, the program was entirely voluntary.
In the military, where you were literally ordered to be everywhere.
Exactly. No compulsion. Totally opt-in. And the relationships were strictly outside the chain of command and outside of their trade groups. But the most radical part, the part that blows my mind, is the civilian attire.
Yeah, making them attend mentoring training in jeans and t-shirts. It sounds simple, but it was profoundly disruptive. It removes all those visual barriers of rank. You aren't a major talking to a private anymore. You're just two people.
And here's where it gets really interesting. And honestly, this is the hardest part for my brain to accept. The program was strictly separated from performance reviews.
Completely firewalled.
Right. It was mentee-led, focusing entirely on their personal goals. Even if, and the handbook is clear on this, even if those goals did not directly benefit the organization's strategic objective.
Which is wild.
It is. Imagine you listening to this. Imagine your boss telling you to spend company time on a project that only benefits your personal life. Why on earth would the military sign up on that?
Because it's the only way to get real honesty. By creating this sacrosanct, completely confidential space, strictly for the mentee's benefit, the military actually fostered deep psychological safety.
So they wouldn't just give the answers the boss wanted to hear.
Exactly. If mentoring is tied to your next promotion, you are never going to admit that you're struggling or that you're burned out. But if you have a safe space to process that, you build real resilience.
Wow, okay. And taking those massive cultural risks back in 2008, it really paid off. No one expected it to turn into a global blueprint, but the early success indicators were just off the charts.
Yeah, the mentees reported feeling genuinely valued and connected to the organization. And relationships didn't just end after the 12-month program. They continued informally for years.
Because it was a real human connection. And leadership noticed, right? They saw a tangible improvement in the morale and the leadership capabilities of the people participating.
Absolutely. The mentors were learning how to ask questions and guide people instead of just barking orders. And the success was so clear that it expanded across all RNZAF bases.
And then eventually it pulled in the Army and the Navy, too. But the real validation, like the global recognition, came in 2014.
Right, the ISMPE accreditation.
Yes, the International Standards for Mentoring Programs in Employment. The RNZAF became the first military organization in the world to be awarded gold accreditation by them. They proved this model worked on a rigorous global stage.
So what does this all mean? How does a program explicitly designed to ignore military performance metrics actually result in a more combat-ready, effective force?
That's the million-dollar question for anyone listening today.
Well, this raises an important question about the true nature of organizational success. We get so caught up in measurable KPIs, right? But by focusing on the non-measurable, intangible benefits, things like belonging, identity, and personal growth, The military organically built up their people.
They built the resilience, the communication skills, the critical thinking.
Exactly. The very things required for modern, complex operations. They secured the mission by prioritizing the human.
It brings us full circle, really. The RNZAF mentoring program is the ultimate proof of what happens when a military chooses people over process. They honored their cultural roots of togetherness and ancestry, and by doing that, they unlocked just unprecedented success.
It really is a powerful testament to their culture. And it leaves you with a lot to think about regarding your own environment.
It does. Which leads us to a final thought for you to mull over as we wrap up.
Yeah. Think about this. If one of the most strictly hierarchical organizations on the planet, the military, can successfully strip away rank, uniform, and chain of command to foster genuine human connection, what artificial hierarchies or uniforms in your own workplace or personal life are you letting hold back your potential?
Oh, wow. That is a fantastic question to leave on. Are you letting a title or a uniform stop you from really connecting and growing? Think about it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. We'll catch you next time.